Hey, this is Bob in the Don't Die podcast, brought to you by Ohana Fest down in Dana Point, and brought to you by Live Nation, bringing you concerts all over the world. It all begins with getting off drugs, people. Let's go out and live life. Get sober, get the right treatment for you, and stop dying. Stop dying, Chuck. That's what we're supposed to do.
Woo!
That's it. No dying, no dying. That's the that's the whole center of life, is to not die. And well, once you're dead, you can't be alive.
Yeah, I know. It's, you can't be both.
I wish some of these goddamn kids would understand that when they say, I don't care if I live or die. I was like, yeah, you do. You haven't been dead yet. You don't know what it's like.
Well, for an agnostic, like you just, or an atheist, just say, remember before you were born, how boring that was? It's that for the rest of forever.
Somebody, I just talking to my partner, Jared Oro, I still call it Aloe. It's been Oro House for, I think, 5 years now. I still can't call it the right name. But Jared said, are you taking care of yourself? And I said, fuck yeah, I got more energy than 30-year-olds. Like, I got, you know. And he's like, well, I just worry about you. And it's good to be loved. It's good to be cared about, right? That was just a friendship thing that Jared said to me. And I was like, no, I take care of myself. And he says, he asked if I would do the thing where I saw how many steps I'm taking. I think because I turned 63 the other day, people are really worried about me, Chuck. 63 must be a bad number. 61's okay. 62. All of a sudden, 63, your business partner is saying, are you getting enough exercise? Are you getting enough sleep at night? Well,
when your people are getting sick and dying, like yours and mine are, people wonder. I mean, I just got a bunch of blood work back. I just had some blood drawn. It's crazy how fast it comes back. I'm apparently pretty healthy right now, but we'll find out from my doctor next week when he tells me that I misread everything, and that he's gonna tell me I'm fat and depressed. Like, he always
oh, how old are you? 54?
56.
56? Yeah, that's nothing. You don't have to worry till you're 63. Trust me.
I've got 7 good years, huh?
But anyways, that's the side note. What we're talking about with Don't Die is don't die of drugs, don't die of suicide, don't die of stupid shit. And what I thought we would talk about is something that I never said around Dr. Drew. I worked 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, right next to Dr. Drew, and I never mentioned this one time. That's how many hours is that?
You guys are still friends. That's crazy.
So listen to this. I don't think it's really a disease. Not in the way that we've been taught in school. I really don't. I never have. I think it's more childhood trauma than anything. I really believe that. And I never say it. And that's why I'm excited about this thing that I got involved with, to see if there's a genetic. Okay, let's see how many of the people who have been going to AA their whole lives are really addicts, according to the Minnesota model, the Dr. Silkworth idea of it's a genetic predisposition, childhood trauma, exposure. I've always been most focused. So let's, for the people that aren't addiction counselors, like I think half our audience are, so they know what I'm talking about. Or maybe in modern world they don't, because I don't think they teach it anymore. The disease model is...
No, they do teach disease model still.
They don't? Do they? Do they?
No, they do, yes.
Okay.
Yes, so it's the disease model of addiction.
A genetic predisposition... Right, you're born born with a genetic mutation or genetic predisposition, just like breast cancer is how Dr. Drew used to say. Right, so okay. Genetic predisposition, childhood trauma, exposure, meaning childhood trauma. You're beaten, you're neglected, you're sexually abused, whatever. How about this?
Or just felt unloved.
Just typical American childhood. Let's call it
divorce. You were born
divorce. Right. So childhood trauma, exposure, meaning use of substances, and use. The final thing that I was always focused on, that I thought, yeah, that exists. Use in the face of adverse consequences, and I had two experiences in my life. of examples of people who I don't know how to frame this, because Elijah knows one of the people I'm talking about. So
if you don't say that, if you don't say that, then make it harder for him to put it together.
I had two girlfriends who became heroin addicts because they were my girlfriends, right? As soon as we stopped having a relationship, they stopped being heroin addicts. Swear to God.
Right.
And I can quantify it. One has been 35 years. She's happy. PTA president, blah, blah, blah. Just the greatest woman in the world. Never had a problem with substances again. Right. Certainly not with heroin. Right.
Right.
So when you present these arguments to someone like Drew, he'll always say, well, you don't know that for sure. Well, you don't know it for sure in the way that you're saying either. You know what I mean? So you can say people lie or you don't know. But I do know that she didn't crash and burn and become homeless like I did. Neither one of them did.
Can I tell you what people like me and maybe Drew's talking point to that would be? Is that those people aren't dyed-in-the-wool, genetically predisposed. These are people who got addicted to a chemical. And a person, a lifestyle.
Right. Did you call me a toxic person?
No, I said they. I'm just speaking hypothetically. I think you're the opposite of toxic. You're like untoxic. I don't know. I'm a toxic person.
We go through many selves in a life.
Yes, many selves. So anyways, I get it. So they weren't genetically predisposed, right? What if that's a way bigger part of the sober community than you think it is? I believe it's a way bigger part. I believe there are people that have an allergy to alcohol, that the AA Big Book says real alcoholics. I know that I'm a real alcoholic. I don't know that everyone in an AA room knows what that term even means. And I can get real vulgar. I can get real vulgar about what I'm willing to do to get drugs. It's like there's no limit to what I'm willing to do to get drugs. There is, like, some people wouldn't walk across the street to get drugs, even though they're like addicted to drugs, or they like drugs, or they abuse drugs. I know, because I've used with every type of addict. Like, you know, immediately when I've got some drugs, I need to think about getting more drugs, even though I haven't done the drugs I got. Your whole life becomes consumed by it.
Right. Well, perfect example. I've got a client who needs a heart transplant, needs to not do drugs for 6 months in order to get that heart transplant, has to wear an external AFib device, getting an internal AFib device because it just stops in their 30s. Couldn't stop, even though they're told you could have between 3 months and a year of life left. You may not even live long enough if you stop right now to get that transplant, but can't. That points towards someone that I can relate to on some point, because like even in the Big Book, it talks about people when they're talked to by their doctor, they can stop. Yes. I talk to people all the time where they go, dude, I was doing as much coke as you were, and I just stopped. And I go, yeah, we were living in hotels, and we were doing all that stuff, and you just stopped. I get it.
But what says that's a genetic predisposition? What if that's a personality?
Our personalities genetically predisposed?
No, I think it's formed in childhood trauma. I think it's just a matter of, like, I don't know enough about child development. I know pretty much, but I'm not a child development expert. But I've been told by every doctor I've ever worked with, 0 to 3. That's where it all happens, 0 to 3, right? In a modern context, at a certain point, I don't know how long it is. I think in America, you only get 90 days off work as a mother, right? So somebody else is taking care of that kid after 90 days.
Right? Hopefully someone good.
Yeah, that's the whole.
Have you seen?
That's who they're gonna be.
Yeah, but have you seen some of the daycares? I remember when we just wanted Elvis to be socialized, so we got him in this Montessori school when he was like two, and I would drop him off on my way to work to Aloe House. Then it was called Aloe House, not Oro House.
Oh, that's the old name.
Yeah, that's the old name. So I would drop him off, and these people would just come running in with their babies, like babies. And they had this table, this round table of like, I think like six or eight kids fit in a round table. And they just would come in and put their kid down in this, like, to stir, you know, to
the high
their
chair.
Legs down. No, but it was built into the table.
Oh, they couldn't get away.
They would just put these kids in and they're off because they got to get on the freeway. Right? And okay, I just thought, if that doesn't create attachment disorder, I don't know what the fuck does. You were just at home in your crib. You were just at home in your crib. And then there's a hustle and bustle of getting ready and getting off, you know, and you got to get out, you got to get to work, we got to get going. Everybody's, you know, the intensity that goes on in this household every morning from 7:20 till 8 a.m. This is, in this house, it's chaos. Elvis comes in today. Oh, he's going to hate that I say this. His hair dryer broke. His hair dryer broke.
Today. I can't go to school. I can't go to school today.
He was 40 minutes late to school.
Because
the hair dryer broke. Anyway, so and Sid doesn't want to get out of bed. Do I have to go to school? And I just is like, I want to go outside. I want to go outside. I want to go outside. It was just like, you know what I mean? You got a three-year-old needs to go outside. A seven-year-old doesn't want to get out of bed, and a 13-year-old's hair dryer broke. Like that was this morning, right?
Right. That, so
you're a little baby. You're a little baby in that. You're like 5 months old, and whoop, you were asleep, and now you got to go, and then you get put in a car seat, and then you get carried in that thing, and you get brought into Montessori, and you get dumped in this round table.
Where all the babies are facing each other on the table?
Yeah, facing each other, yeah.
Well, you know, either attachment disorder or that kid becomes a captain of industry because they can handle anything and all the stress in the world,
How
right?
about this? Yeah. Oh, I got a philosophy for that. I think they're the same thing. I think becoming a drug addict and becoming a captain of industry is the same thing. It's attachment disorder.
Overachievers
because I deal with people that have a tremendous amount of wealth, and I just always think like, when is enough enough? Like your great grandchildren are set for life; they never have to work ever. When is enough enough? And you know, like it's just like, when is enough enough? When you hear about these $300 million publishing deals the musicians are getting, when is enough enough? Like
One of those would be enough for me. That would set me up.
Yeah. How about 1% of that would be enough for me?
Yeah, I look at what is life-changing money for me in my world, what is owed on our townhouse, what is owed on her car, and what little I actually need to get by and be happy.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean there aren't other things that I might be able to add to it, but I don't see me becoming a golfer or a skier. Because I don't like golf and I don't like
I think we're lucky because we like what we do. I think a lot of people don't like their jobs, right?
True. So there's much more need for escape. Yeah.
That is a bummer. Well, there's much more need for achievement, I think. So anyways, you're stacking dollar bills, you know, whatever. But I think America is the land of attachment disorder. And so why is the highest addiction rate in the world in America? Because it's the land of attachment disorder. You know, I don't know. I don't want to talk out of turn, but I have friends in Scandinavia. They literally get a year off to have a baby. A year.
Yeah.
That seems like a better society for creating good attachment and healthy kids, right?
We get more than a year in Japan.
Yeah. So anyways, we say we're number one. I don't know what we're number one at, but we're certainly not number one at
gun deaths and overdoses.
Stress.
Well, we're not number one at child development. We're not number one because, and I'll tell you, we here are, you know, we are stay at home parents. I work from home. Chrissy's home. It's still, then you overdo your parenting. Like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, now we're going through this thing with Idris where he pouts and we all respond to him. And it's just like, it's not helpful to him. And so I tell him, like, and nobody wants to talk to you when you talk like that. Nobody wants. And so we're trying to, like,
you're a little dick and no one likes you. Talk right.
No, but he has a pacifier in his. Here's what happens. He has a pacifier in his mouth. He's upset about something. And he's whining and not talking. And so I say, take a pacifier out. I can't understand what you're saying. Then he takes it out. And then he's just like pouty and whatever. I say, just say it. Say your business. Say your piece. What is the problem, Idris? And he'll say, and it turns out like Sydney wouldn't play with him. Right. So then you have to. This is the hard job of parenting, Chuck. Most parents don't have the patience for it. You have to explain to him, you don't always get what you want. Sydney is not always going to want to play with you when you want to play. Do you know how irritating that is to have with a conversation with a three-year-old child about that? Most parents aren't doing that. I promise you. And he walked over to her and started pulling her out of her chair. And I said, Sydney cannot want to play with you, Idris. I said, you could be nice about it and say, will you play with me? And he said, will you play with me? And she said, sure. And then that's all not real and not authentic. You know what I mean? Because she's only doing it because he's crying. But at least there was a conversation about it instead of just give him whatever he wants. You know what I mean?
Or even like hearing him out, which I don't think most parents do. They get so rattled.
Right. I think most of them are at daycare. A lot of them are at daycare.
Where they're nobody's being told, sit down and shut up, like they're newcomers. Shut up. And if you don't sit down and shut up, they go, well, your kid needs to see a doctor.
If you're talking, anyway, you're not listening.
I believe addiction is a trauma disorder. I think it's an attachment disorder. I think, yes, there are real alcoholics, but nowhere near the numbers that are admitted to psych wards, rehabilitation centers. Not 20% of the population. There's no way it can be. And so... And they're all force-fed into the system that is less and less appealing as each generation comes to it. We just need to do better at dealing with addicts. And to me, I started Don't Die because really the goal is don't die, live long enough to figure it out, right? Whereas before, you know, I always say, I went to my first rehab center when I was 27. You know, I was an adult. I wasn't an emotional adult. I still am not. But I certainly was an adult, a functioning in society adult. I paid my rent. I had a washing machine and dryer. I had dogs. I had Elijah. I was an adult. I was an adult. I didn't behave like an adult because I had trauma, Chuck.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't mean AA is going to solve all my problems. The AA book itself says you need to seek outside help. I think probably all those people that were in the original AA needed outside help because I'm sure everyone now needs outside help. I don't think AA can help you on its own.
The method of getting out of you, putting other people first, is how you stop focusing on your own problems. Instead of figuring them out and solving them, you just kind of... That's just a trick.
That's not going to work long term.
Right. Well, you know, yeah, that's the other part of it is you know, we're told to, you know what, the things to forgive and accept, accepting and forgiving doesn't mean it was right. It just means it did and all that stuff. And not everybody can swallow that. Right. And that's okay. And the outside help, I think what you're saying, because you've said so many times, so much shit just went full circle for me about America's soul sickness. You may be touching on the cause of that soul sickness, which is a lack of stability within each person because of the way we're raised and because of the way we do things here, even in the most healthy type units, because you've got middle class is poor is hard on everybody. Middle class is hard because everybody's got to work. And then rich drop their kids off, even do boarding school where they don't even raise them for years at a time. So that could be the problem. It could be one of the causes of the problems for the detachment disorder that leads to addictive behaviors that end up in, you know, and there's 1,000 different ways. There's gambling, there's body modification, extreme body modification that is just, you know, there's all these different ways where people are acting up in ways that they haven't.
Well, we're not. When we're saying 20% of the, almost 20% of the population have substance use disorder, we're not even taking into account obesity and food.
Right.
When you add that number, when you add that number, it's 70%. 70% of the population. So 70% of the population has attachment disorder in my observation. So what is attachment disorder, you might ask? It's the inability to attach and detach, to love and allow love. Right? I had it, like, when I realized how badly I had it, I just didn't think there was any way to solve it. And I was with a therapist who helped me little by little. And the things you do to kind of make yourself maybe have healthier relationships doesn't make any sense. It makes more sense to me. Yeah, do contrary action. Yeah, yeah. Stop thinking about yourself all the time. Think about other people. All the AA tricks really made sense to me. And I used to recite them chapter and verse. Gloria Scott recited them to me. I recited them to anybody that listened until I wanted to kill myself when I was 8 years sober.
Right.
That's when the jig is up.
Bill was at 20 years when he started writing the real writings.
Right. And that trick is not going to work forever. So then I went to therapy. And therapy, the little things just seem so stupid. Like my therapist would say, when you talk to your mom, look at your watch. I said, I don't wear a watch, Roland. He said, whatever. Look at your phone. Look at a clock. You tell her.
You got to argue on everything. What a dick. What a dick you are. You're toxic.
I have attachment.
I am toxic.
Yes. Own it.
I got to tell you another thing that he told me that's even funnier. I think I've told this story before. But he said, when you get on the phone with your mom, Elijah knows my mom, it's his grandmother. She was nuts. She was batshit crazy. So he says, tell her how long you're going to talk. So I have 15 minutes, Nancy. Right? That's literally what I did. I say, yeah, Elijah's laughing because there's no way you could talk to Nancy Forrest for only 15 minutes.
It's impossible. I loved her. I tried to never call.
It's a 2 hour minimum, Chuck. A 2 hour minimum. And that's if you talked to her a day before yesterday.
I could just put the phone down.
Yeah, you can put the phone. You just put the phone down and it just you can come back. Literally 20 minutes later, she's still talking. It's and Dana and food and the Amazon people didn't do this and the neighbor wouldn't let her dog. It was batshit crazy. So he says, 15 minutes. You tell her we're going to talk for 15 minutes. And I just laughed. Roland, you obviously never met her. I got to bring her here, which I did one time. My therapist met Nancy Forrest. You know what Roland said afterwards? Yeah, that's a borderline. Yeah, that's borderline personality. That's who your mom has. Borderline personality.
Oh.
Right. So
those you know what? I try to avoid those people like the plague. Whenever we get one that comes in.
How do you avoid it when they're your mom?
When they're half your generation.
Yeah,
you know, as clients, yeah.
Because they will always find someone to attach to. They will glom on to somebody.
It's always me. That's why I don't want to work in treatment anymore. And by the way, there's a lot of male borderlines. It didn't used to exist 25 years ago. There's a lot of male borderlines
used to be diagnosed.
In the world now. No. Yeah, it's here. So I tell Nancy, I got 15 minutes. I just wanted to catch up. How are you doing? Oh, well, you know, Dana won't talk to me. I'm like, oh, okay. What happened? What happened that my sister won't talk to you? Oh, well, you don't want to hear it. You'll just take her side. That's how a conversation would start, Chuck. This is just a check-in conversation. I'm already the enemy in a war I haven't heard about. I don't know what the war is.
Well,
but I will take Dana's side in it. And that's why. And right away, she's mad at me in 30 seconds, Chuck.
Well, you let her imprint on you. You made eye contact with her. And not only that, you called her.
You called.
So, I called.
You broke all three rules.
So, so, So at the end of the thing, I'm like, okay, well, I love you and I love Dana. I don't know what to say. I just want to see how you're doing and tell you I love you. Are you hanging up on me? I said, I told you I only have 15 minutes. That yeah. conversation went on about who do I think I am? She gave up her life for me, Chuck. Her life. She gave up her life for me to be born.
Uh-huh.
Because I wanted to get off the phone after 15 minutes. She gave up her life for me to be born.
Wait, that is a cute angle she has. But she didn't say there's somewhere out there. There's a Bobby Forrest floating around and I'm going to bring him into my body and give him life. That's not how any of that shit happened.
So get this. So another probably 45 minutes, I get off the phone, go back to Roland. How'd it go? Not good, Roland. Not good. This is cognitive behavioral therapy. You know, she threatened, she disowned me. She's going to kill herself. He said, see, because you say only 15 minutes. I said, yeah. How is this helping anything, Roland? How is this helping? It's helping you have a boundary. I said, how do I have a boundary? Now I had to talk to her two more times to make up for that. Oh, you no, Joe, don't do that. I said, well, you know, she's calling my phone, blowing up my phone. Elijah knows this. If you don't answer your phone, my mother would call you 72 times.
Oh, no.
Right?
Yeah.
So this explains a lot about me, doesn't it, Chuck?
No, I don't think you're that kind of person. I think you'd go, fuck him. He doesn't answer his phone when I call. Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
Never really liked him anyhow.
But to have that onslaught after another mother who didn't want me at all and didn't ever hug me or love me or tell me she loved me ever. My grandmother who raised me, no love. Mm-hmm. Then she dies. Sister mom steps in and I get that for 25 years. Right. Which would you rather have? I'd rather have the mom that doesn't call you and doesn't care and doesn't
right.
tell you she loves you, right?
Right. She's not filling you full of guilt every day.
Yeah. So, but little by little, I started to have better boundaries. Little by little by little. It took years and years. And you just can't see that it's going to lead anywhere. And, you know, and then it got to a point where I could say, listen, Nancy, I got no time for this. I love you. I don't know what to tell you. Can't, you know, when you want to have a good conversation about good stuff and fun stuff, and or you want to come out here and visit. She came out here to visit one time. She was out of my desert house in Joshua Tree, and I woke up late, like 8. She had been up. She was a little tipsy. She was a little out of whack.
8 a.m. Right? tipsy?
8 a.m. tipsy. And she was sitting outside on the deck, and I was like, what's going on? And she goes, I had to take a Valium. You know I don't like to take pills. That's another thing. She didn't like to take pills. She took pills all the time. She doesn't like to take pills.
You know I don't like this.
So then I smell alcohol. She's got a coffee mug. I go, what's going on? She goes, I need a little beer to calm my nerves. So she took a Valium and was drinking beer out of a coffee mug at 8 in the morning.
Right, but she knew it was bad. That's why she put it in a coffee mug.
But that's when we had one of our better conversations. I said, you don't know how to... No, I said, you just don't know how to be with me. You don't know how to be. Let's just be here. Let's just sit here. And we sat on the back deck and she calmed down. But I'm saying, some people need a Valium and a beer to have a real conversation, Chuck.
A chemically imbalanced... You're saying that there's a mental health diagnosis and that she very well may be chemically imbalanced. That may be where she hits with a little bit of beer, a coffee cup of beer and a Valium might be where she hits where I feel when I wake up.
We had a great conversation. I said, I'm so much like you, Nancy, and I love you. And, you know, I've always been, you know, you're larger than life to me and whatever. But I don't like how we are. I don't like any of this. Neither do I, Bobby. Oh, my God. Neither do I. And she starts crying at 8:30 in the morning. Right.
Mm.
And I was like, OK, then let's just try to be friends. Let's just try to be cool. Let's just try to be whatever. So anyways, why I say this is because I don't know how to solve the trauma problem. I guess going to rehab and going to AA is a good solution for it, but it won't work long term. It won't. Yeah. And if you look at me as an example, okay, it worked because I became desperate enough to accept a bunch of stuff I don't believe. I have a t-shirt that says, it's Angela Davis. It said, I am no longer going to accept the things I cannot change. I'm going to change the things I cannot accept. Right? Mm. A little bit different than the old AA motto. And what I chose to look at that is I'm going to change me and my reaction to the world around me. I'm going to feel loved. I'm going to love. I'm not going to sit around and do contrary action the rest of my life and be the grumpy old man in the back saying, oh, you know, I'm a real alcoholic. I was tore up from the floor up. I've been around here a while. When they got 45 years. I love when they have 45 years and say, you know, I've been around here a while.
Been around a couple days. Filled more than you ever drank, son.
Easily there was a Bob Forrest track to that guy in the back. I was headed towards that.
Okay, yeah.
Right? And I took the therapeutic turn and it really helped me. I'm not saying that you ever get healthy, but you get better and you understand better. I think you understand better. Like what my reaction is going to be. And I'm really good at talking honestly to people. I called the wrong number today. I have two friends that have the same name. I called, they're in my phone. I don't know. I got to do something about that. They have the exact same name. And so the guy finally answers his phone. And I go, dude, you're harder to get a hold of than a fucking rock star. And he's like, hey, Bob, what's happening? And I go, well, dude, what's the follow-up from last week? He never called me back. And he goes, what last week? And I go, when we met with those two guys, and he goes, we didn't meet with two guys. I go, oh, my God, this is not, oh, I got the wrong. And I said the person's name. And he goes, yeah, everybody does that. They all call me talking about music business stuff. And I was like, well, you have the same thing. But then then I had an hour conversation with him about kids because he's got two little kids and he's having a hard time or whatever. And we just talk. That is love. That is the world I want to live in. Honesty. Oh, I made a mistake. I called the wrong guy. Sorry. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I wasn't overwhelmed with embarrassment feelings. It's a simple mistake. You guys have the same fucking name. And I told him, I got to change the name. I'm going to put a different name in there so that I know which is which.
I did that with a couple of Kevin friends.
And then I realized I met with the guy on Thursday and I said, I'll talk to you after the weekend. It's now Wednesday. That guy must think I'm an asshole who blew him off. I've been calling the other guy all
the time. Yep, there it is.
There it is. But I don't know. I just hope that everyone can find more and more solace, more and more peace. And I don't think you can find it if you're labeling yourself a person who has a disease and you go through the rigmarole. I just don't think that works for long term. I think it works to not drink and take drugs. I think it gets easier to not take and drink and take drugs. I think that's why people don't drink and take drugs. The idea that I would drink or take drugs is so ridiculous to me. And everybody, I've been saying that for 15 years, and you know what I heard in my home group when I lived in Hollywood. Oh, you know, that's the first sign. You're overconfident. You know, something wrong with you. I'm just being honest. I can't imagine anything. My mom died. I got a divorce. I was living in a sober living. I had no money. I didn't drink. My life is pretty good now. I appreciate it. There's still a lot wrong, and I try to deal with it every day. I'm not going to drink. That idea that you're just one dumb idea away from a drink, I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
No, but I think in the formative years.
Yeah, first 10 years, say. I'm talking about the first 10 years.
Okay, the first at least five. If you're not just at it, man, it takes so long because first we got to get rid of the dope and the booze. Then we can start working on the human issues because the rest of it is all just human issues. It's not simply addict or alcoholic. Everybody's talking about shit like they're the only people in the world that feel the way they feel.
In a room with 600 people have done the same shit.
Right.
But I think it's harder now because when you make a financial mistake now, you pay for it for fucking decade. You know, I was lucky. All the mistakes I made were in like the late 80s, early 90s. by 99, it had all been forgotten. Except for state, except for the state franchise tax board. Those motherfuckers never forget a thing. State of California never forgets. I remember I finally got a hold of some money, Chuck, and I was going to pay my back state taxes. I had made $12,000 off something, and I owed like $8,000 in taxes, and I sat with a laptop with Elvis's mom, and we went on the website, and I had the bank account, and we paid it, and then the debt didn't go away from the 1994 or something. This is in 2010, and I was like, what happened? And I kept reloading it, like, what the fuck? It triggered that I owed money in 1991 that still wasn't on the website anymore. And it paid 1991 that I didn't think I owed. The entire money that I was paying 94, 95, 96 for, it went to 1991. I had no more money left. And I was like, boy, these people never forget. You're paying, they're having you pay your state taxes 19 years later.
Yeah, when it's not even worth as much. 19 years later, that money's not
that money's worth a lot more. Yeah.
Yeah. So I can't imagine what it's like to have an eviction on your record right now, you know, and to get sober today and try to clear away the wreckage of your past. Well, I think it's a big fucking hard thing.
Computers have tightened up life so much.
Yeah.
When you think about the little things, like we could get our driver's licenses and use an eraser and just kind of fudge the second number and pencil it in to use for a fake ID. I mean, it was so much easier to get away with shit. That's what I'm saying.
So I think it takes 10 years. If you started last year, like Elijah, you have 2.5 years now. I think it's going to take Elijah 7.5 years to be where you just feel like, oh my God, I'm a full fucking righteous human being. I think you're just buried in all the mistakes we make in our addiction or whatever you want to call it, in our using. Evictions, credit card failures, taxes, you know, just getting health insurance, Medi-Cal fraud. You know, I have clients that then they go to apply for Medi-Cal and they're shut out of Medi-Cal because they were found they defrauded Medi-Cal. And it's just like they like got double paid and they didn't give it back and now they can't get Medi-Cal. Everything is fucking on a fucking tight rules. Everything.
Mm.
Yeah.
Evictions, if you have an eviction, you're never going to get an apartment. You're never going to.
I'm on this uphill battle right now. Yeah.
And we used to be able to say, oh, you know, just do what you can, what's in front of you, and it'll all work out. And it took like maybe 5 years, right? Now it takes 10 years, I believe.
Yeah.
It was 5 years before I was out of debt and everything to where I could actually, you know, get a passport if I wanted one. And I, you know, I had a driver's license back and all. It took a full 5 years to pay everybody off and get everything straight. And that was in 1997. So, I mean, and that was
when it was easy. And to get a credit record above 700 or something. So that you
right. can
remember, yeah. So
I had to marry a smart person.
I'm telling you that. I'm telling you that takes 10 years now. I believe it does. Because the cost of living, right? So when I got sober, where Elijah grew up in a closet bedroom, cost $460 a month, utilities included. That's in 1996, right?
Right. Okay. It was a huge apartment and a huge closet.
Yeah, but it was a big closet. He had his own TV in the closet. It
was the best damn closet on the block.
Yeah, it was a good. That was the best Christmas I ever had. That was the best Christmas I ever had. I still remember. It was Max, Keith, me, and Elijah. It was the greatest Christmas ever. It's Christmas of 96. So, and I'm looking at the guitar I got that Christmas. Max bought me that guitar right there 27 years ago. Yeah. So what's the increase? What equates to $460 right now? Does anybody know? Is it double? Is it double?
More than that.
Yeah.
More than that. Well, and those same apartments are 20.
No, yeah, but I'm not saying what the greedy landlords are charging for it. The scumbag Trumpers of the world.
Right. The landlords. The money's probably double. But when you think about
So you shouldn't be able to get an apartment for $920 a month. You can't. It's $2,000 minimum.
It's $889 with inflation.
Okay, so 600 went to almost 9. You were very close, Bob. Good for you.
No, 460 went to 9.
Oh, 460. So it doubled.
Yeah, it doubled.
Literally.
Okay, that apartment, I went by it to look at it because there was a for lease sign. It was 2,400 five, six, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
So rents have six times, but the inflation increase would have had it only double.
And I wonder if they cut those apartments in half.
Young people can't survive, Chuck, and then rebuild their lives. They can't. Not in Los Angeles, they can't. Not in 5 years.
I just went around this tree where I was so not hip to it, where I was talking to this person that works with us, and I go, why don't you just get a place in Garden Grove? I get it, it's not Huntington Beach, but it's 10 minutes down the road. And then they started telling me how much things cost in Garden Grove. That's where we went when we couldn't afford Huntington Beach, Costa Mesa, Newport Beach. We went inland. We went Garden Grove. We went, you know, east side, Costa Mesa, Santa Ana, you know, and now those places are untouchable.
Well, okay, I had a condo my mom gave me. I had to cover the mortgage. The condo was on Beach and Warner behind the car lot there. They're still there. And it was, I remember, because I got a roommate my senior year of high school, and he paid $400 and I paid $300-something. So it was like $780 a month for a two-bedroom, beautiful condo, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then I moved to Costa Mesa to a garage. And I rented that for $200 a month, and I had to shower outside with a cold. It had a shower head, but it only had cold water. $200 for a garage. I bet you that garage is $738 a month.
More. Yeah,
that garage is a sober living now.
It has
eight people living in it in bunk beds.
It was a converted garage, and it had like a laundry room, but there was no washer and dryer in there. It had a big sink, and it had a microwave in there, and it had a shower head with a shower that you could take, but it only had cold water. I remember that was a bummer. I would put my head in and just wash my head because you didn't want your body in there.
Well, they've all those kind of deals are gone. They insulated the garage and put a little tiny sink and a little tiny shower, and it's $1,500.
Yeah.
Shed you have out there with the dirt floor would be $1,500 an hour.
Yeah, I know. I think I'm thinking I got problems. We got to talk about the RV. I know that people
it's back.
talk to me more about this fucking RV. I had two clients ask if they could move into the RV at my house. And I was like, how do you know about the RV?
Don't Die Podcast, dude.
Did you tell them, what the hell are you doing with your life, son? When they're brand new sober, this isn't very helpful.
The idea that newly sober people would live in my RV is just so frightening to me. Like, I can see it from here.
The desperation, like, right. Especially when guy, we pull them out here.
The one guy was totally serious. He said he'd give me $500 a month for the RV to live in the RV.
Low ball.
Did you say $1,200? You must have bumped your head. That's $1,500 a month.
Dude, don't you want me to get sober?
Oh God! No, $500 a month. Could I get more for it? Maybe I could cover some costs. No, but so the RV and he's $700 worth of. I got it all. I talked to this cool old guy that does transmissions. He said $700, and then I just can't. I don't know. Every time I have $700, I'm like, $700 to fix that thing. It's just going to sit there the way it does now. Only the transmission will be fixed. So we got to figure out what to do with the RV. I think we should auction it off here. Everybody buy an auction ticket for like $100 or $50 or $40 or something. Let's get it gone. Here's what I would do. So if I know that we're going to auction off the RV on the Don't Die Podcast, I'll pay the $700, get it up and running and charge the battery and get it all ready to go. And then we'll give it away. And then I can get $1,000, which would, if I get $1,000 for the RV, which my $700 back for the transmission and $1,000. So they need $1,700. Chuck, you know what my total loss on the RV will be? $9,000. I will take a $9,000 hit. I'll take a $9,000 hit at this point to get rid of this fucking thing. Because everybody, Elvis says it, Chrissy says it. Whenever we walk out in the front of the house, you can see the RV and they all go, are you going to get the RV fixed? And I'm like, well, why? We don't go anywhere in it. We never did anything in it. Everybody.
But it rattles when it goes down the road. It has electrical situation. You know what? I can't believe that there's not a place, a used car lot somewhere where you could get at least half of what you paid for it without
having to do it. No way. No way. Like, I don't know. But anyways, I think because, you know, somebody could live in it. Now that I think about it, yeah, Elijah, we could park it near your house in like Inglewood. People would pay fucking, you could Airbnb it in Inglewood.
You can rent it out by the hour. You can turn it into a hot sheets.
Put it up on blocks out in front of my place.
Yeah.
You know, they can't tell them.
No, I watched a Mr. Beast episode where he did. I love Mr. Beast, by the way. Shout out to the great Mr. Beast.
Yeah, he was
better entertainment than network television. He did this thing where he was going to spend a night in the cheapest Airbnb he could find. And then slowly step up in 10 increments to the most expensive Airbnb in the world. So he stayed in a Winnebago in outside Seattle in the middle of the woods, had no heat, and it was exactly like our RV. And it was $35 a night. And then he went all the way to $100,000 a night chateau in Austria or something. And it was the coolest episode. But I always think like $35 a night. If I rented that thing out for 10 times, that's like $350. That would pay for the transmission after 2 months. Well,
that's $1,000 a month. If you could rent it out for the month, that's $1,000. That's crazy when you think about it.
You have to be on the Airbnb website and you got to do it. Like, I don't know. And then but the point is I would want to Airbnb it enough to get the transmission fixed and then whatever. But that's our sidetrack on the RV. The RV is a part of the Don't Die podcast. I swear to God, two clients have seriously talked to me about living in the RV and somehow being around me would help them be sober. I said, you don't know that. You don't know that.
No, they
might set you back.
I go to a meeting every time we're done recording.
I just want to say life comes full circle. I remember when this auction idea came around and I was like, oh my God, my dad's so crazy. That's so, okay, if you do it, I feel bad for Mike Marth got to deal with all that. Now it's me.
You know what? How many listeners there are, see how many are willing to participate in this auction, and then we can set the price somewhere in there. It'd be nice to Uncle Bob's money back.
Put a question on Facebook.
if we sell 170 tickets, what is it? If we sell 17 tickets at $100, that means you have a 1 in 17 chance. I get the transmission fixed and I get $1,000. I'm losing $9,000.
No. There need to be 100 tickets sold
at $40
and $50.
And that's $5,000.
There we go. Now you're getting somewhere. If you happen to sell your $5,000, that seems greedy. Be your reserve.
Here's the thing. That sounds greedy to me.
Only losing 9,000 feels greedy.
For the rest of my life, I will say I lost $9,000 in an RV. That's way more valuable to me.
Everybody that played only lost $100 themselves. And the person that won got it for $100. So
I didn't think of that. You're a good salesman. I didn't think of that. They got it for $100.
They got it for $100. So you will never feel bad if something goes wrong. You say, dude, what do you expect? You paid $100 for an RV. Right? It's not like
I might not have to fix the transmission when I think about it that way.
Hey, as is.
$100, you tow it. You tow it.
Get this motherfucker out of here. Anyways, I gotta do something. It can't just sit there forever. It's gotta, you know,
it's gonna rot. Things are gonna stop working due to lack of use. The rats are gonna chew up the wiring. The bears are gonna claw it up. Owls are gonna nest in it. Then you're not gonna be able to sell it because they're endangered. All sorts of things can go sideways.
What if I put it out on my friend's property in Joshua Tree and the Airbnb it? That might work. I wonder if Victoria Williams wants a Airbnb and RV on her property. She's got a lot of property out there.
She might be able to use that as part of the Airbnb experience. They can take it to the national park and they can go drive it around, and it's something that's a benefit. Wow.
You guys are really thinking.
We got it. Yeah, we're really thinking. Elijah's going to have to execute it all. So you and me are the ideas, guys. Yeah, Elijah, get the RV out to Victoria Williams and Joshua Tree. She's going to take it from there.
I'll just pull it behind my car.
It doesn't have to be this weekend, but by next weekend, it'd be good. So chop.
Oh, my God.
It'd be good. So anyways, I do believe in the disease model. I don't want anybody to walk away from this podcast thinking I don't. I just don't think 20% of the population has the disease of alcoholism.
That's never been a number. When did that number happen?
It was on the SAMHSA website. Admissions. Well, people, admissions, emergency room visits, overdoses. See, it just can't be that much a part. When they changed it to substance use disorder, right? Because that's prescription drug addicts, that's addicts pain management. When you include all the people who have, what's the term they use? Negative effects from substances or something. Substance use disorder, it's almost 20% of the population. I mean, everybody in workers' comp has addictive disorder. This is an add-on to the court case, right?
Right, because it's a protected class. Right.
Yeah, yeah. So that population, the addict, the overdoses. So here's the thing. Yeah, you could be 20 years old and the first time you really did drugs, you overdosed and they took you to an emergency room. That doesn't mean you're an addict, but that does say you have substance use disorder because you were hospitalized for substance use.
Right, but it was always 9 to 13%, and that played out with the guys returning from Vietnam that were all the guys that were addicted to morphine over there, that it was like 9 or 10% that actually continued in that lifestyle, and the rest were able to get off. So it followed the rule of it was called Operation Golden Shower or something. I forget what it was called.
Oh, but my God.
No, Operation
That's a Circle
Golden
Jerks Street. Album. That's a Circle Jerks album.
It was called something. Gosh dang it. But it was, they studied the people coming back that were addicted, that got addicted while they were over there. And it was the 9 to 13% were the ones that stayed in that lifestyle when they returned and weren't able to give it up.
Oh, 9 to 13% of all the people that were actively in addiction.
But how much a percentage of soldiers that came back from Vietnam had substance use disorder?
It didn't exist.
Yeah. Right. I'm saying substance use disorder. I'm saying it's a real problem. Yeah, I'm saying, okay, say 5% of the population have a genetic predisposition. They're going to drink themselves to death without a spiritual solution to that problem, right?
Right, which makes it a behavioral disorder, which makes it unlike cancer and unlike leukemia.
Exactly, and unlike lupus, what I'm saying!
And makes it a personality disorder, more like OCD, which means we need to have different thinking, we need to have physical interventions.
You know, I've had a lot of people that I've been side by side with in AA over the decades, and I just suspect that they aren't alcoholic, right? And when you hear their stories, it's always lesser stories. Yeah, I moved to LA. I wanted to be an actor. I'm from Nebraska. I started going out to clubs. I started getting drunk. And then they went to AA and they met celebrities, and they just kept going to AA.
I've heard it's a great place to meet people and get a leg up.
Yes.
No joke. I've heard that. People told me. They told me, why don't you go over here to this meeting? Why don't you go over here to that meeting? And I go, because I'm not looking for a hookup or a leg up. I'm not in entertainment. I just beat a bass.
And they don't wind up struggling with, you know, suicidal thoughts or mental health issues 10 years into sobriety and then find themselves in 5 years of psychotherapy.
Yeah, no, they just like it. They just like it.
No, but then there's the Matthew Perry's. And, you know, there's the reels, the real ones, you know, that it's not a game.
Matthew Perry fits this thing. So Matt Dyke was one of my best friends. A lot of people don't know who he is. He invented pop hip hop. That's all you got to say. He produced Tone Loc. He's the music behind the Beastie Boys, Paul's Boutique. He is one of the only geniuses I've ever known.
Did Matt Dyke pass away?
Yeah, he died.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it was an addict and he just disappeared with all the millions of dollars that he had. And if you read his obituary, I coined the phrase, he's the Howard Hughes of hip hop. And it was actually in his obituary. So anyways, he did get sober eventually. And well, he came to my rehab, came to Los Angeles. And, you know, it took him a while, like, to even be functioning. Like, he was there for months and months. And at one point, he came to me and goes, I think I have the thing that's the worst thing for a drug addict. And I said, what? And he goes, unlimited resources.
Yeah. Oh.
There it is.
There it is. But right. He was so profoundly affected. I remember I went to finally, he's, you know, we tried to get him to go to rehab. And finally he did. And the day I picked him up, he said, I just got to have one last drink before I go. And I said, okay. And he had one of those French presses, like the weird medium French press. He poured it half filled with vodka. And then he poured the rest to the top with lemon lime soda from Vons. And he guzzled it down in 3 gulps. And then he said, okay, let's go. And I was like, that is an alcoholic. That is not what I'm hearing from these stories at Third and Gardner. That is an alcoholic. And I'm saying it's a real thing. I mean, the way he devoured that, the way it brought love into his soul, the way that it made it, okay, I got to do this, and then I'm going with Bob to start a new journey. The whole thing was alcoholism in a nutshell. Being lonely and not making it as an actor and ending up in AA is not that. That's not alcoholism. That's loneliness. That's looking for community. That's being insecure. That's attachment disorder. That's not feeling love. That's not feeling like you're enough, which all alcoholics have those things too, Chuck.
But they also
have the love that Matt drank that vodka and lime juice with, that this is the thing that makes existence worthwhile.
Sometimes I still get that. It's been 26 years, and sometimes I'll just think, I'll be somewhere watching music or whatever, and I'll just think, you know what, a Smirnoff Blue on the rocks, I know the way it would tingle my nose, I know the way it would burn my throat, I know that my cheeks would flush, my stomach would get warm, and I would feel like, oh, yeah, I know it would do that. Or maybe I'd throw it up. I don't know that I could do that. I don't know if I could start like that.
That's alcoholism, that attachment to that thing. God rest.
It is a spiritual, it is a loving, but it did me dirty. And I wanted to work things out. And it was a very abusive relationship. And I tried every other drug under the sun to go with it. And I just couldn't make it work. And
I found that a half pint of peppermint schnapps, inject some heroin, smoke some crack, watch some MASH. That is perfection. It only lasts like half an episode of MASH, and then you're fucked for the rest of the day. But that moment for 15 minutes before the commercial break of MASH halfway through, that's perfection.
With Trapper or BJ?
Oh, always with Trapper, the original. With McLean Stevenson.
I think it's real alcoholism. I think it's real alcoholism right here to sit like the heroic self-mythologizing guy that's in AA would be like, you know, Thunderbird down by the train tracks. No, Chuck, it's a Smirnoff Blue.
Peppermint Schnapps. Peppermint Schnapps.
That's real. That's
you don't real. Even have to brush your teeth. You know, the thing about peppermint schnapps, it's like brushing your teeth in the morning. Let's I used to drink it every morning. Half pint, peppermint schnapps, $2.89. Let's go.
Mine was National Bohemian, which is pretty much just water with some fat and salt in it.
I don't know what that is. These goddamn kids, Chuck, they don't know the pleasure and beauty.
He's speaking that millennial language.
That millennial language. That went right over everyone.
NGL, IBK.
That's shitty beer. PBR on the East Coast.
Oh, I couldn't drink beer in the morning. I'd throw it up. I had to have something sweet, a little something sweet. Something nice.
I had to drink Magnum to calm my stomach before I could drink it. Because Magnum's the poor boy's old English.
Oh, yeah.
That would calm my stomach so I could eat, drink.
Legend of rock and roll, Big Joe Turner wrote Shake, Rattle, and Roll. Sitting there with him at soundcheck at the Club Lingerie, he's drinking a little tiny bottle of cod liver oil. And his wife is sitting there, me and Brendan Mullen. And then Joe got up to go soundcheck. And I said, "What is?" And the bottle was nice. I said, "What is this?" And she goes, "Oh, he used that to coat his stomach." I said, "Coat his stomach for what?" And she said, "Because he's planning on drinking tonight."
Wow.
Because Big Joe Turner is planning on drinking tonight.
You know, cod liver oil, that's what they always gave the little rascals when they were in trouble or something.
That was like the punishment medicine. Settles your stomach.
Oh, you're going to be sick. Here's some cod liver oil.
No, I think he had ulcers that probably were exacerbated by alcohol, and that cod liver oil covered that stuff up. All right, I got to go. I got kids to get to bed, but,
yes, sir.
You know, love to you all, and let's, you know, it's to be continued, but I do think there's a thing called addiction. I think it's real. I don't think it's anywhere near the numbers that people think it is. I think there's another problem, which is worse, which is childhood trauma and American lifestyle. I think that, you know, everybody's saying like, well, what do we do? What do we do about Trump and Biden? What do we do about our politics? I don't think it's solvable. I think to solve the problems of people who have who are being labeled addictive disorder, almost unsolvable. You got to get get real about therapy, and nobody, you have to be willing. You don't have to be willing to go to AA. You just have to go. You have to be willing to have therapy work for you.
You might have to be willing to give up on politics in order to get well.
And you have to, and you have to clear your brain of all the substances first, you know? So yeah, there's a lot there. A lot to think about.
All right, in the coming weeks, we're going to talk about it more and more. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Good night. Thank you. Good to see you, fellas.
Bye-bye.